Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and with me is Mr.
John Arricchio here with everybody.
Mr. Arricchio, how are you, sir?
Good. What's going on, Joanne?
Well, nothing. A little crazy today. It's just I'm getting confused. I'm starting to get confused on the days, times, and I don't know what anything is anymore, but we have a great show tonight. We have two great guests. We've got comedian, playwright, Steve Bluestein, and celebrity artist Mario A.C. De La Casa. Before we get started, let's introduce our sponsors and say thank you to our sponsors, The High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kidnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, and Take a Break from Cancer.org, for Pete's sake. I believe we have on the phone Mr. Steve Bluestein. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. How good? Happy Sunday.
Oh, is that what day it is, Steve?
Yeah. Well, you should see my house. I have Post-its all over the office, the kitchen, and the bathroom. And the Post-its say, radio show, 4 o'clock, radio show.
Oh, God. Unbelievable. I'm so sorry. I apologize. I was running late. So. Well,
no, you're not late at all.
Thank you so much for joining us. It is a true pleasure. I mean, you have been around for quite some time and have done some amazing things. I mean, I didn't know that you worked on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. How'd you land that gig?
Oh, well, I was one of four writers. We wrote the pilot and the series. And I had just signed with ICM, the talent agency. And my agent sent me in to, on the interview, and I said, what's it for? He said, I don't want to tell you. I said, what do you mean you don't want to tell? He said, just go on the interview. So
right.
I went on the interview, and I met with Carl Kleinschmidt, who was the head writer of the show, and Ronnie Graham, who was like the associate head writer. And we're talking, and I had just done either the Merv Griffin Show or the Tonight Show, one of those shows. And I brought a videotape, and they put it in, and they watched it, and they said, wow, that's really funny. And I said, and we talked, and I finally said, could somebody tell me what show this is? And Carl said, it's the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. And just as he said that, a tiny little gnat flew in front of my face, and I swiped at it. And Carl thought I was doing the Three Stooges, take.
And he
said to me, you're hired. You'll fit right in. And that's how I got the show. That is exactly how. And the funny thing was that this Hi, Honey, I'm Home show was written by all the writers were stoned all the time, including myself. And Bruce Valanche was one of the writers on that show as well.
Oh, that's so funny. Bruce is coming up now Wednesday, I think Bruce is on.
Yeah, well, don't tell him I told you.
So was the Brady Bunch your first gig, or no, you were doing stand-up at the time?
No, I had been doing stand-up, and I had been opening, I believe at that time I had I closed with on the road with Kenny Loggins, and I had been working pretty steadily in Vegas and, you know, the Reno and Tahoe. But, you know, the real money for comedians is not in doing stand-up, unless you're in the Jerry Seinfeld category, the Jay Leno category. The real money for new comics is in acting and writing, because it's a steady gig, and it pays well. So my agents, in their wisdom, were pushing me toward writing, because I have an affinity for that. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting at my computer right now writing my first novel. I have two other books out at the time, Memoir of a Nobody and Take My Prostate, Please. And I have those books out, and so now I thought I'd try a novel. I love writing. I really do love it.
And what's the novel about? Can you share that?
Yeah, the novel's about a place called the Point of Pines in Revere, Massachusetts. And it was my parents had a very tumultuous relationship. I saw violence. I saw spousal abuse. I don't remember one happy 10-minute period in my childhood, except when I was at the Point of Pines, where we had a group of friends who were like family. Right. And so I've decided to start writing about that place, that happy place.
Yeah,
and,
well, I believe I saw somewhere that your childhood really wasn't so fabulous, right?
No, I think the expression is it sucked. my parents, I mean, I saw things that no child should have to see. I remember at one breakfast morning, sitting at the table, my parents screaming at each other, and my father picking up the dining room table with the food and the glasses and the water and throwing it at my mother. And me sitting there holding the fork going, I had Cheerios. You know, that was, you know, the, yeah. So, you know, and that's the kind of thing I saw on a pretty regular basis,
Well, you're absolutely right. That sucks. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally sucks. Well, you know, we've overcome that. It's many, many years since then, right? So,
that's what the book is about. The book is about, the novel is about overcoming it and still dealing with those feelings at my age. You know,
right.
You know, and you think, oh, get over it. Well, you just can't get over it. It's like saying, is telling someone, eat human flesh. It's just in our DNA. We don't do that. So it's in my DNA, these experiences that I had as a child. And it took a lot of work to get through it. But let's not talk about those years.
Exactly. Tell us what the book is about, the Memoirs of a Nobody. What's that
one
about?
The Memoirs of a Nobody, which is available on Amazon.com, is is about my experiences in show business. And I tell all the backs, you know, I opened for Melissa Manchester, I opened for Donna Summer, I opened for Barry Manilow, Kenny Loggins, Frankie Avalon, Frankie Valli. You know, I worked consistently. And so I tell the backstage stories. And I also tell the strange things that happened to only me. Only me. And the book now on, I believe it has 79 five-star reviews. And what people are consistently saying is that Steve has the ability to find the funny in the most horrible situations.
And that's
true, because there are people, here's the best example. There are people who just see the world differently than everybody else.
Right.
And I call them intrinsically funny people. David Brenner, who was a friend, was one of those intrinsically funny people. Mm-hmm. He was walking down the street in New York City, and a manhole blew up in front of him and went 25 feet into the air. And David looked at it and went, heads. You know, and that's an intrinsically funny person.
Yeah,
they see the world, they see the world a little differently than everyone else. And that's how I am. So that's what people are seeing in the book. And then as I was writing, stories would come into my head about things that happened to me in a child in my childhood, and I tried to correlate them with, you know, who I was today. And those are the chapters that are the most touching, and that really people are telling me those are the ones. We love the funny, interesting ones about show business, but the introspective ones are the ones that are really the meat of the book.
Yeah, and, well, people can relate to those probably more than the
right,
show
exactly
business.
Right. You know,
yeah.
In the book I say, I write about this stuff to show that if I can get through this stuff, you can get through your stuff. And that's the interesting part of the book. You know,
Well, great. Well, that's available on Amazon, and we're going to talk about Take My Prostate, Please. What's that about?
Well,
this title,
well,
I got to know what it's about.
again, I see the funny in everything. And because I had such a rocky childhood with parents who really never looked out for me, never protected me, I, as an adult, I grew up protecting myself.
Right,
and so
right.
Part of that was constantly going to doctors for checkups, you know, annual checkups to make sure all the systems were go. Well,
yeah.
One year the systems were not go, and I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Oh, my God. You okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm knocking on my desk. I'm fine.
Yes.
So, and then as I was going through the process of, you know, the doctor's visits and the testing and the surgery and things that happened, I would start seeing things the way I see things. Like one day I was coming back from the doctor's prior to the surgery, and I have a Tesla, and the light went on the Tesla that it need the tires needed air. So I said, well, no problem. I'll just go to a gas station and get air for my tires. Well, I live in Los Angeles. You know, the closest gas station is in Toledo, Ohio. So I keep going looking for gas stations. I finally find a gas station. And I pull in and I drive around, and I'm looking for the air pump. And there's no air pump at the gas station. And I turn to no one and I say, there's a mini mart over there. You could cater Thanksgiving dinner at this gas station, but you can't get air for your tires. What person said, I think I'll open a gas station, but who needs air? And those are the kind of thing. And then as I was pulling out of the gas station, the light that was had lit that said it need tire pressure suddenly went out. Suddenly I had air. I'm thinking, you know what? You know, and so those are the kind of things. And then, on the day of the surgery, they brought me into the pre-surgery room, and it was a male nurse. He told me to lie down, so I was lying down, looking up at him, and I could see the whole bottom of his chin was covered in thick makeup. And then, as I looked closer, there was eyeliner under his eye, and I thought, oh my God. This guy did drag last night and didn't have the time to take the makeup off. RuPaul is taking out my prostate, you know, and that's the kind of the way I saw the whole surgery. And,
so
and,
are you like me? If it's anything could happen, it's going to happen to you. That's my life too.
Let me tell you something. We could be at the Hollywood Bowl with 16,000 people. A meteor would fall out of the sky, and it would hit only me.
Exactly. I know that feeling. Oh, God, this is too funny. Oh, my God. Well, hopefully life has gotten better over the years, and things have gotten better for you. I mean, you're successful.
Well they have gotten better. I mean, I moved out of Los Angeles, and I moved to the desert. You know, it's where old show business goes to die, just outside of Palm Springs.
Where are you originally from, Steve?
Boston.
Oh, okay.
Boston via New York.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 3 years to lose the Boston accent, and then if I'm home for 15 minutes, I'm talking, hey, Marlene, come over here. Your mother's on the phone. So you know, like, it never ends for me, right? So I bought this house, about a magnificent home here. It's 4,000 square. It's got 6 bedrooms and 6 baths. I live alone. Don't ask. Don't ask. I always wanted a big house. I now have it. I walk around. I go, I think tonight I'll sleep in this bedroom. So it needed a new driveway. So I call a contractor. The guy says, yeah, it'll be 3 days. So 3 days, I can live 3 days without my car. So I leave the car in the garage. 2 weeks later, it's still not done.
Oh.
I have no food. But it was like first it started to bubble. The driveway started to bubble. You know, like one of those mud pots at Yosemite.
Yeah,
big bubbles. Then he came back, he fixed that, and then the next day it turned brown. The whole driveway turned brown. It wasn't supposed to be brown.
Yeah, how did it go brown? Why'd it go brown?
He put some kind of coating on it, and the coating reacted with the cement, and it turned brown. So he had to come back. So he finally came back like a thief in the night, 6 o'clock in the morning. I didn't even know that he had been here, and he redid the whole driveway. So I was stuck in the house for 5 more days, and it's perfect now. It's absolutely perfect. Yesterday, I went out to look at it, and I came back in the house. I hit the button on the garage door, and it wouldn't move. I kept saying, is there like a karma fairy that's following me around?
I know. I had the same problem. My pool went out. We had to get a new pool pump. Then the dryer, first the oven, so we had someone here to fix the oven. Now, mind you, the oven's only maybe 4 years old, and the pilot light keeps going. It's the igniter, we've had that fixed, the pilot, that. So we go to use the oven. It's still not working.
I think we're brother and sister from another mother. My pool pump went out last week. The week before that, are you sitting down on the same day, the refrigerator, the oven, and the dishwasher all went out.
Well, now the dryer. I need a dryer fixed, either a new dryer or fixed, or a new oven or fixed.
Well, I have a dryer story. I mean, I got a story for everything. I moved into the house. They had old dryers, and they had old washer and dryer. All right? I wanted a stackable. So, and I was going to put them side by side. So I went out and I spent, you know, like $3,500 on a washer and dryer. The day they come, they take the old washer and dryer away, and they put the new washer and dryer in, but they don't fit. They don't allow me to close the door to the garage. So they take the old new washer and dryer away. Now I have no washer and dryer. I have to go to the store. What did I find out? The only washer and dryer that will fit in that space is a newer version of the ones they took away. So I now had to buy the same washer and dryer that I had there originally.
Oh, my God. Oh. So tell us some stories about working on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. Were you close with the kids? Or
well, it was a very close-knit family. As a matter of fact, I'm still close, not you know, buddy close, but still close. You know, it's been 35 years.
Yeah.
They've grown up. I was very close with Florence because she and I had the same manager, and you know, and I was very upset when she passed away. And her manager lives not far from me, so the connection is still there. But like I said before, we had one writer who was signed on to the show. He came with a pencil, a briefcase, and a bag of pot. And that was, no, that was in the 70s when it was not cool. And this guy was stoned 24/7. And if you went in, if you went into his office, you would leave stoned.
Right.
You know, and so Carl said to me one day, go up to Mike's office and finish the scene with him. I said, okay, I went up. I was there 5 minutes, and I was, you know, looking for candy bars, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
So my secretary calls and said, they need you down on the set. Milton Berle was on the show that week.
Mm-hmm.
So I can barely find my feet at this point, and I have to go down to the set. So I say, you can do this. I'll just pull yourself together. You go down. So I go down to the set, and the director says to me, Steve, Bobby's not here. Will you read his part? Of course, my testicles hit the floor because I was I was so stoned, I had to know where. So I said, sure. So the scene is, Milton is introducing himself to Bobby, and we start reading, and he comes in, and he says, hi, I'm Milton Berle. And I said, hi, I'm Steve Bluestein. I'm one of the writers, and I've been a big fan of yours. And Berle turns to the director and says, look what a good actor I am. The kid thinks I'm introducing himself to me. So I look over at Carl Kleinschmidt. I was wearing sunglasses. I look over at Carl Kleinschmidt. He knows where I've been. I lift off the sunglasses. He looks at me. I look at him. He literally fell off his chair laughing because he knew that I was completely stoned at the time.
Right. Well, you must have got some good. Do you think the writing was better because you were stoned?
I mean, look what we had to work with. You know, we tried the best we could, but the whole concept of the Brady's singing and dancing was really such a stretch, you know. And Sid and Marty Krofft, God bless them. They came up with concepts. You know, I think we had swimmers on the show. We had, had a swimming pool with swimmers, and one of them almost drowned.
Oh, God.
You know, we're doing CPR on the swimmer, and the director's going, all right, next, let's go to the next setup.
You know. Was it a live audience, Steve?
No, it wasn't a live audience. But let me tell you the wonderful thing about that show. I got to work with, are you ready? Farrah Fawcett, Tina Turner, Milton Berle, Florence Henderson. I'm trying to think who else was on there. Rick Dees was on the show. You know, remember Disco Duck? He was on the show. And from that show, Rick and I have been friends to this day. Who else was on the show?
They had so many people on the. Yeah, there was a
Rip
lot.
Rip Taylor. Yeah. And Rip Taylor and I remained friends until his death. Rip was the kind of guy, he would come to rehearsal with a big box of chicken wings, and just give everybody a chicken wing, just, you know, to feed everybody. Or if we gave him a really terrific scene in the show, he would rip out a page from the phone book, and in big letters he would write, "We all thank you."
He was crazy too.
He was. He was of his era, as we say.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we were to watch the Brady Bunch now, the Variety Hour, we would think it was so corny. But at the time, I mean, everybody loved it.
No, they thought it was corny then. That show was voted the fourth worst show in the history of television. And I called Bruce up and I said, did you see it? We were voted fourth worst. And I said, we can't even be second worst. We have to be fourth worst.
It was probably because of you, you know, because everything happened.
Yeah, my fault. That's what my mother said.
Exactly.
So everything was my fault.
Well, I wanted to ask you, did your parents get to see your fame?
My parents got to see my fame. My father was very excited and supportive. And as a matter of fact, when I was working in Atlantic City, I think I was opening for Marilyn Michaels. That could have been. And my father took a train and two buses to get to see. My mother, 40 years in show business, never came to a single show. Told friends, I just don't find him funny. You know. And as when I published my book, Memoir of a Nobody, she, in front of friends, she said, "What did you write a book for? Nobody cares about your life."
Oh boy.
I know, and that's
so
and that's when I realized why my father divorced her. Go ahead.
What, Johnny?
She was very supportive to you. That
yeah, very supportive. Like Hitler was supportive of the Jews.
Were you an only child, Steve?
Yes. You think those two people could produce another? They couldn't stand each other. She wouldn't let him touch her with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, boy. Oh, I'm so sorry. But you know what? All your experiences, they've made you a funny guy and made you what you are today, all your experiences. So you can't really despise them 100%. You know what I mean?
I understand. That's what they told me as they were putting on the shock collar. You know, the funny thing is you say, were there any other children? All my life, I always wanted a brother or a sister. But when my parents passed away, I suddenly realized if I had had a brother and a sister, they would have been as screwed up as the rest of the family. And I had to deal with none of that. I just had to deal with myself. And so it's really a blessing they didn't have other children.
Yeah, it would have been nice, though, to have somebody to, you know.
I really don't think so. You don't know what kind of insanity that family was.
That's true. I can't speak for you, you know. But the your father lifting the table, you saw the New Jersey Housewives with Teresa flipping the table. Did it bring back?
No, my father was ahead of his time.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, let's say, okay, I know you're writing the book now. Unfortunately, I've been asking everybody this question. Since the world stopped, what would you be doing if you weren't writing the book? Would you be out performing or would you be...
No, I have basically retired. Yeah, I have basically retired. You know, I spent 30 years on the road.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot out of you. You come home and you go, oh, look how big the soap is. You know, you're just living in hotels all your life. And I don't like to fly, and I'm very much a homebody. And being a homebody gives me the ability to stay home and write. And,
right.
You know, and that's waiting for you. I wrote another chapter, you know,
good,
sitting here
good.
At the desk. Yeah.
And when do you think the book will be done, huh?
I don't know. You know, I've got 18 pages. But I'd rather have people read Memoir of a Nobody and take my prostate, please. In the meantime.
Right.
You know, and the funny thing, I have a publisher, and he's made this book available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, ebook, iBook, Nook, Kindle, you know, and for enough money, I'll come to your house and I'll read it to you. You know.
Well, real quick, you were in a lot of movies too. I mean, you were an actor as well.
I mean, like I said in the beginning, my agents tried to get me out as an actor and a writer because the money's not in stand-up comedy. The money is in the acting and the writing. And I did a film with Lauren Bacall, and I was in Rabbit Test with Joan Rivers. Again, Joan and I had the same manager, and so that was very easy. And then I did They Call Me Bruce with Johnny Yoon, the Korean comedian. And there was a film called California Shake, which was short sketches. You know, I was also in The Ace Trucking Company with Fred Willard and the late, wonderful Fred Willard. And Fred and his wife Mary and their daughter Hope are like family with me. We spent 45 years every Christmas, every New Year's, every Thanksgiving, every 4th of July, and then I was on St. Patrick's Day. I was an official Irish person. Mary, you know, Mary would get me in on that. We had parties, huge parties. They had parties, and I went to them, and the two of them were the most magnificent human beings you could ever hope for to have in your life, because they brought a group. They brought 200 people together every year for Christmas.
Nice.
And provided Christmas memories for all these people. And when we lost Mary, which was about a year and a half ago, I have to tell you, I was devastated. I took to bed, and, you know, because when you don't have a family, you, like, I never really had family. So my friends, I created a family of friends.
Nice.
And Fred and Mary were, and their daughter were my family. So when we lost Mary, I was devastated. She and I were writing partners too.
Yeah,
we wrote for Norman Lear, and we wrote for she and I wrote for Norman Lear, but then I wrote for Playboy, and I can't remember. Oh yeah, A Year at the Top for NBC. But you know, so when Mary went, I was inconsolable, and then a year later, Fred passed, and it was just, you know, it was like, I turned to a friend, I said, 2020 is one of the crappiest years I can remember.
Well, for everybody, it's been
horrible. For everybody, with the pandemic.
And
that idiot in Washington. But, oh, did I say that? Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do, you know? But,
well, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to vote. That's what you're going to do.
Exactly. You got that right. But, I'd like to say thank you so very much for joining us. And if you want to get out there and pick up these new books, it's Memoir of a Nobody and Take My Prostate, Please, both on Amazon. Anywhere else, Steve, that people can
Well, like it? I said, they're Barnes & Noble, Nook, Kindle, ebook, iBook. And I think, no, there's not an Audible book because I'm dyslexic, and it would take like 28 years for me to finish reading my own book because of the learning disability. But it's everywhere, and all you have to do is Google the titles, and you'll get a place to get it. But Amazon actually is the best place.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking for. I want to pick them up myself. I'm not a big reader, only because I don't have much time. But both of those sound fantastic, and I'm going to have to try and pick them up. So hold on one second. Mario's asking. I'm so sorry. Do you know Mario Della Casa?
I don't know Mario, but I'm going to listen.
Yep, he's up next, so that's why I have to call him now and get him out here. But, Steve, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. Enjoy your retirement.
Thank you.
Stay away from bad news and keep on laughing.
You too.
Thanks so much, Steve.
I really enjoyed my time with you guys.
Us too. Thank you so much, Steve.
All right,
bye-bye. All right, that was Steve Bluestein, comedian, playwright. Oh my God, I can't call this number, Johnny. Hang on, I lost my pen. Mario's trying to call us, but he can't get through. I don't know why. And now I can't call him because I got to write this number down. Hold on. One moment, people. I apologize. We got to merge to call. Johnny, I'm going to lose you for a second. So if you want to talk about something, feel free, my friend. Tell them about your lava lamps.
Joanne and I were talking about our old lava lamps. I've just set up a black light in the basement with all the old black light posters. It brings me back to the 70s, and we just moved into a new house. And somewhere, one of those boxes, I have two lava lamps that they're probably broken by now. But I'd like to get them set up.
That's going to be a nice mess for you, Johnny boy.
Yeah. There'll be a lump of wax in an oily box. So while Joanne tries to get Mario on the phone, you
I
guys,
think we have him.
I'm here.
You got him. Hey,
yeah.
Mario.
Hi, Mario. Sorry, don't know what the issue was. I apologize. He couldn't get through. He was trying to call us, Johnny Boy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I tried to connect, but it just wouldn't go through at all.
Well, we're on the phone with us, we have Mr. Mario A.C. De La Casa. And, Mario, thank you so much for joining us. When I saw what you do, I was dying to talk to you because I'm a big fan of I Dream of Jeannie, like everybody else, I'm sure. And how did you wind up being the designer of the I Dream of Jeannie bottle?
Long story.
All right, well.
how much time do I got?
Yeah, whatever you want.
You know, I always wanted that bottle when I was a kid, and I was never able to find it. I was very fascinated with Jeannie's bottle when I was a child. I wasn't so much a fan of the show, but I liked that bottle.
It was cool.
It was, and I was more of a Bewitched boy than I was an I Dream of Jeannie boy, but I loved that bottle. And I had the fortune in order for me to be able to know Elizabeth Montgomery when I was young. And so that's why mostly I was a Bewitched boy, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so the thing is that with me, I wanted to be able to do something Bewitched as a child, because I was always an artist, and I wanted to always create something of that show. And Liz told me I could do anything that I want, but she said, you know, I didn't really have anything tangible, you know, like the bottle on the other show. She said, you know, I wiggled my nose, you know, I snapped my fingers. I really didn't have very much on my show. But on that show, there was something there. And she was right because I liked that bottle as well.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find it in order for me to be able to make it. And she says, well, if you can ever make that bottle, she says, the same owners of Bewitched are the same owners of Genies. And I will introduce you to the powers that be in order for me to be able to see what we can do in order for this to take off if you want. So that was my hunt in order for me to be able to get a bottle. And I'm 16 years old at that time.
Oh, wow.
And so I looked and I looked and I found lamps and I found bases and things like that were kind of shaped like the bottle, but nothing exact.
Right, right.
You know, and I needed exact because that bottle was going to be my canvas. I needed to replicate that bottle in order for me to introduce that I can do it right.
Right, right.
But I couldn't find it anywhere. And it took about a year and a half, 2 years, and I'm walking down the street in San Francisco, and I see an antique store window, and the antique store was closed. It was on a Sunday, and I remember I saw the Jim Beam bottle in the window, and that was what Jeannie's bottle was. It was a 1964 Jim Beam bottle, and I didn't
was
know.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
It was a Christmas decanter from Jim Beam that they put
wow.
out, and I had no idea, but I saw Jeannie's bottle there. And I was like, okay, this is my bottle, okay? I need it. So I go to the store, but it's closed and it's locked and it's everything else. I'm like, oh, no. And so the following day, I made sure, I saw that they opened up at 8 o'clock. I made sure that I was there at 7 o'clock because I wanted to make sure that as soon as he was turning the key, I was going to get that bottle. It was mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I did exactly that. And I finally have that bottle a year and a half later. And so here I am at 18 years old now, and I'm still wanting to be able to do it. And back then, now I have to get the design. And so everybody, now Jeannie has never been off the air, but back in those days, when I was taping I Dream of Jeannie on my VCR, I had the beta VCR.
Yeah.
And so there was no pause button, in a sense, without the picture flickering all over the TV, you know?
Right, right.
And bouncing all over the place. So it kind of looked hideous my first try out because I really couldn't get the designs as nicely as I needed. So I'm like, okay, what more obstacles do I give here, you know? But so age 19 comes, and Barbara Eden does a People magazine, and she's posed with her bottle right in the front. So
there you go.
Here I am. So
right.
60 years, but now I can strip this bottle down, and now I can go ahead and I can copy this bottle. So that's exactly what I did.
Oh, so the bottles that you create, excuse me, the bottles that you create are actually the Jim Beam bottles, but then you paint them and make them look like the Jeannie bottle?
Well, they were the Jim Beam bottle on the show, but I had to replicate the bottle itself in order for me to be able to, because those bottles are hard to find.
Yes.
And so I had to duplicate that bottle in order for me to be able to do what I do.
And
so
how did
I
do that?
Well, with a mold and permission,
okay.
You know, and so I had to get permission and I get a mold and I had to do everything that I had to do. But originally I made it into a ceramic mold because it was easier to be able to do than glass, because I didn't know anybody that could make a glass mold yet.
Right, right.
But I painted that bottle and I put it for sale. There was a Yahoo auction before there was an eBay auction.
Right.
And so I put it on Yahoo just to see if I could sell it, just to see if there was any interest.
Mm.
And I put it up for a week. I brought it to Liz, actually, to Elizabeth Montgomery, and she says, I can't believe you're still working on this thing. I'm like, yeah, I am. This is also the same year that Larry Hagman was his most famous, because it was also the year that they were going to introduce Who Shot J.R.
Right, right.
And so I brought the bottle down to there, and so Liz says, okay, well, I'm going to introduce you to the people, the powers that be, because I said that I would. And so I said, okay. So I had this bottle made, and so she introduced me to the president of Sony at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we go there together. And so he says, well, it's nice that you have Liz, but do you have anybody from the show in order to be able to endorse you on this product? And I'm like, no. But he says, well, I don't think this is going to be a good idea. And I'm like, well, I think it is, you know. And so he says, well, I don't really think it is. I said, why don't we try? He says, why don't you go get me the endorsements or an endorsement from somebody on the cast, and let's see what we can do, and I'll see you when you get those. So I thought my meeting was blown at that point, you know. But I went back to Liz's because I stayed there. And back in the day, they didn't call it stalking for what I did.
I was going to ask you, how did you know Elizabeth Montgomery?
She lived across the street from my aunt.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I used to play with her kids.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so I right on Hollywood and Vine, there was a guy selling the maps to Hollywood Homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go look inside of there to see if I could find Larry Hagman or Barbara Eden or Bill Daly in order for me to go knock on their door to see if I can get an endorsement from them.
Right,
and
right.
The only person I could find was Larry. And so I went to Larry's house, and there's a big old gate over there. And so I climbed the fence, and I went to go knock on the door. And so this lady answers with this big old thick accent, and who are you? What are you doing over here? I said, how did you get in? I said, Larry Hagman is expecting me. And so he's not, we'll be back until tomorrow. Who are you? What are you doing? I said, look, he's expecting me and I need to talk to him. You're going to get fired if you don't let me see Larry Hagman. He's not here. He'll be back tomorrow. Fine. So the following day I went back over there. I climbed the fence and I went back over there. I knocked the door and she was like wondering how I was climbing over this fence because it's a big fence.
Yeah.
And so I'm knocking on the door. I said, he's expecting me. He's not expecting you. I said, look, I'm going to get you fired is what I'm going to do if you don't let me see him right now.
Yeah.
And so she sees that I'm just a kid. I'm only 19 years old, and I know nothing of business. And so she looks at me. She sees I'm just a kid. She puts me in the kitchen, and she makes me a grilled cheese sandwich, and she gets Larry Hagman for me. And so here he comes walking into the kitchen, and he says, I hear that I'm expecting you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. He says, well, what am I expecting? And I'm like, well, I have a business opportunity for you that you just can't say no to. He says, I can?
Was this the 80s?
This was the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And so he says, well, what's this wonderful opportunity that I can't say no to? And me not knowing anything about business, I said, look, I'm going to let you endorse my product, and I'm not going to charge you to endorse it. And he's like, oh, really? I said, yeah. He says, wow. He says, you really know what you're doing, kid. He says, would you believe people want to give me money in order for me to endorse them? But you know what you're doing, you know? So he said, well, what is your product? And I said, this bottle. And he says, well, it looks just like it. And I said, well, that's what I want to be able to do. And he said, no. He says, well, right now I'm kind of focused on Who Shot J.R. This is just about to premiere that, and that's the biggest thing that's going on TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have to focus on this. I said, look, I need you to do this for me. And he didn't want to do it. I said, look, I'm going to come back here every day until you say yes. And so the lady's standing behind him, and she's like, yes, yes, just do it. Just do it, because he's going to bother me every day unless you do. I said, please just listen to your maid, because I'm going to. And he's like, I better listen to my maid considering she's my wife. And so I made good with her real quick, you know.
Nice.
And from that moment on, I got his endorsement. And so Larry and I, he kind of took me under his wing. And I became, and I told Liz about it, and we went back to Sony, and I said I got Larry's endorsement, and then he introduced me to Barbara, and I got Bill Daly's as well, and then the president of Sony was very laughing at how I would go get Larry's endorsement on this whole thing, and he put trust in me, and he said, okay, let's see if this works out, and so it cost me a lot of money, and I had to be able to do it, and you know, thank God I had a mom. And I still do, and I had borrowed some money from mom that I got in order for me to get the licensing at the time, and I did. And but then it kind of took off. The ball was rolling. When I saw that, when I got that bottle that I wanted to sell, I put it up on that Yahoo auction, and I thought maybe it's gonna sell for $500-$600. You know, I'm hoping, you know, but it sold for $13,500.
Oh shit! Wow.
And
good for you.
And so I was in shock.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of people outbidding one another. So I wrote them all back. Back in those days, they didn't have screen names. They just had the email addresses.
Right.
And so I messaged every single one of them. I said, look, I will make you a bottle at your last bidded price if you still want one. And I made almost $80,000 within a two-week period. That's what I said. And so in my head, I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm rich. But it didn't work out that way. But I mean, it allowed me, in order for me to be able to do what I needed to be able to manufacture the bottle, in order for me to buy my paints, in order for me to be able to get a business going and to buy my licensing and to pay my mom back. And so I had to be able to do everything with this money that I made, and I did. And so back then I didn't know how to cut and paste. I was writing everybody individually, and I was doing everything that I can to push it. And the internet was just taking off. So I would join all these user groups and all that kind of stuff. And it just, the ball just kept rolling and rolling. And then me and Larry went on tour forever. And then I became the official artist for Dallas as well. And
yeah, I saw that. I saw that you actually did some paintings of the Dallas folks.
Yeah, the Jock Ewing painting.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
You know, and I'm also the official artist for Freddie the Flu, the HR Puff and stuff. And
I saw that too. Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything kind of took off. And I figured as long as I give people what they want and I can give them elegance on top of it, because I just want to give them something that's similar. I want to give them nice. I want to give them elegant. I want to please the child inside of them, but I also want to give them gallery as well.
Right. Now, how long does it take you to make one bottle or one flute?
Well, it depends on the design. I have over 60 bottle designs.
Oh, wow.
And so it depends on the design. But the one that everybody knows mostly is the purple one.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's, you know, that's a good 8 days in order for me to be able to do one bottle on that.
Yeah.
The first season bottle was black and white, and that's about 3 days' work on that one.
Mm-hmm.
The flute, that's Freddie's a pain in the butt to do. I'd say he's about 2 weeks to be able to do Freddie. I get cut a lot doing him.
Now the bottles are a little pricey, which I could understand why. I mean, they take a long time. They're beautiful. The artwork is intricate. It's very mm-hmm. detailed. Now, when you do the conventions like Chiller Theater, and do you tend to sell a lot at those conventions? Or
I usually sell out. You know,
really?
I usually give a special, and I usually take $100 off my website price.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring it there, but. It's with or without Barbara, I usually sell out. And it's nice if you get a bottle that's signed by Barbara, because it does appreciate in value.
Of course.
And, you know, there's bottles right now that are selling for $5,000 at auction that have Larry Hagman and Barbara Eden, and you're never going to get Larry to sign another one. So, I mean, they do appreciate in value. The bottle. Yes, sir.
I got a question for you. Who's the buys the bottles the most? Is it the male or the female who would buy the bottle the most?
Gay crowd is mostly my market. I would have to say women named Jeannie. You know, women named Jeannie, the gay market, mostly. I would have to say a good 75% is the gay market that purchases the bottle. My biggest market is Australia. And New York and New Jersey. Those are my three main target bases.
Mm.
Wow!
It is Jeannie's bottle. You know the demographic when people look at the bottle. You can look at the bottle and you can immediately recognize it by saying, "Oh my God, that's Jeannie's bottle."
Nice.
Or you can have somebody look at the bottle and ask you if that's a bomb. Okay. And, you know, and you'll hear that you, and when those questions are asked, you know that those people are unfamiliar with Jamie.
Right.
So it is, right. It is baby boomer and Generation X that recognize this bottle. Well, we're
right.
We're all still here still, most of us.
Right.
And so I'm feeding to that crowd is what I'm doing. And the thing is that Jamie's bottle and the Ruby slippers, I mean, there's only a few things in this world that came from TV and movies that are immediate icons.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What other props would you consider doing from yesteryear? And what have you done from yesteryear other than Freddie and the bottle?
Well, Freddie and the bottle are the top two. Wizard of Oz, I can't touch. As much as I'd love to, I can't touch it because the licensing on that is like $500,000 to touch
it.
And you have to prepay your royalties to that as well. So that I can't touch it on that. But as far as Jeannie's bottle, it stands toe to toe as far as recognizability compared to the Ruby slippers. There's not very many things out there. You have the slippers, you have the bottle, you have Freddy, you have Lost in Space robot,
right.
and that's really about it. You know,
yeah.
I mean. You know, and then if you really in later generations, you're going to think, if you have to get down and dirty with it, then you're going to start thinking about Wonder Woman's headpiece or her bracelets, you know.
Right,
but
right.
I mean, but that's iffy, you know. But
well,
you know,
there's you got the Brady House, that might be a seller, the Brady Bunch House, the Munsters House.
If you were to do that as a dollhouse in a sense, yeah, that would be good. But I wouldn't know how to do that. You know, I do everything.
Well, you didn't know how to do a bottle, so.
Well,
you know.
I didn't know how to do a bottle because I didn't have the tools I needed at the time to do it.
Right, right.
You know, I didn't know the exact designs. I just knew I liked Jeannie's bottle. I didn't know about what color the dots were. You know.
Right, right.
And
how do you put the furniture inside the bottles?
Oh, that's the sofa bottle. That's a different bottle altogether.
Yeah, how do you do that?
That's like a ship in the bottle. That takes about 16 to 21 weeks to make one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And those are probably a lot more pricier than the other ones, right?
Those are 800.
Wow. Wow.
You know, but light goes on and the sofa's in there and she's in there looking up at you and the whole thing. And,
nice.
You know, for 21 weeks of work, when you break it down, it's, you know, $5 an hour, you know?
Oh, no.
I mean,
of course. No.
You know,
like I said, they're pricey, but they're worth it. I mean, the artwork is beautiful, and it's so intricate and detailed, and you're not going to get it anywhere else. So
you're not. I love what I do. I'm never going to get rich off of it, but it pays the bills. It puts food on the table, and it allows me to do. It really, really, really does allow wishes to come true in so many, many, many ways. I am the official artist for the Oscar Suites. To the Academy at the Academy Awards, and
oh, wow.
I get the bottles. I have a selection of bottles out there, and all the stars, all the nominees, winners from the prior year. I have everybody sign the bottle as soon as they come in, and I have all these autographs on all these bottles. I have a lot of bottles sitting on the table, and I donate all these bottles to charities so they could sell them in order to be able to make their wish come true in order to, help the charity out. You know,
nice.
So. In some way or form or fashion, it really does make a wish come true for many, many.
And
so for me, that's gratifying.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
You know,
now tell me about the celebrity, the Enchanted Evening that you guys did for John Ritter. What was that all about? It was a fundraiser for John Ritter?
Oh, that one there. Yeah, I put on a show at the Beverly Hills Center with my oil paintings is what I did. And
okay.
I invited a whole bunch of celebrity friends and Hugh Hefner and Valerie Harper. And I had a lot of whole bunch of people, Renee Taylor and everybody come in order to be able to help so we could sell some of my artwork so we can help support Amy Asbeck with her John Ritter Foundation. It was it's a wonderful cause that she's working so hard for that. I mean, she lost her husband, for God's sakes, in order
right.
For... And John was never sick a day in his life, and all of a sudden he dies.
I know, that
problem.
Was so shocking.
It is. And
yeah.
so Henry Winkler was a really good friend, and
as
well. And so we had a lot of support because Hollywood really did love John.
Oh, who didn't love John Ritter?
Yeah, he was really wonderful. He was a genuine human being.
Right.
And so I had to reach out to Amy and we got to do something here. And I met Amy at the Oscars, and we got together and we put this together, and it was a great evening. It was nice. I wish we would have raised a lot more money, but I'm grateful for the money that we did raise.
I thank you,
Hefner, for that. I like being able to do that with my artwork. I don't need to make any money, and I don't need the notoriety. I really, really don't. I've never been. I really don't need to have a spotlight on me. I just want to be able to help out if I can.
And if my
artwork does that, I'm cool.
So at this gala, you did paintings of Elizabeth Taylor and Anne Martin, and then you sold those, and then the money went to the charity.
Yes.
Nice. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, John Ritter. I mean, who didn't love John Ritter? He's been around forever that we know, and before that horrible incident. And your artwork is beautiful. I'm looking online, and absolutely beautiful. And so anything in the future that you may be working on, are you still just going to stick to your Genie and Freddie and oils?
Yeah, I'm not going to do the oils anymore. I've decided to stop painting on canvas. I love working on canvas, but it takes a lot of work. And I do suffer from carpal tunnel, and I have to focus on what pays the bills. And what pays the bills is Freddie and the bottle. And so I have to put my time and energy into that.
Right. Well, if anybody wanted to get their hands on a I Dream of Genie bottle, how would they go about that?
GenieBottles.com.
You got it. And they vary from the prices, the lowest, like $150 and up, I guess?
No, they're $279 on my website. And I do throw them on eBay for $199 and on up from there.
Nice. Well, I'm in awe because I'm looking at the bottle as we're talking, and it's just beautiful. I mean, I can't imagine sitting there and painting that. That would take me forever. I mean, they were so intricate and detailed and beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
I appreciate that.
How many do you have in the house? Displayed in your house?
Oh, displayed. I have bottles that are signed by Larry and Bill and Barbara and Hayden Rourke. And so I have about six in my house that I displayed, all different designs that are around the house. As far as how many I have in my studio is my garage. And so I have a three-car garage, and I turn that into my studio. And I probably have about a good, 800 bottles in there.
Wow.
So all I do is work, paint. That's why I have no life. So
look at this. You've got I Dream of Genie face masks. How cool is that?
I do. Now I'm doing that. Goodness. I don't know why I started that thing, because I can't see. I'm not 25 anymore, but I'm doing it,
Yeah.
I really want to give people what they want. I really
and you,
do.
Do you make those yourself too?
I don't make the mask, but I do. I buy
you
the
did.
Mask.
And you designed
it.
But I
do put these crystals on the mask itself.
Nice. Wow. Well, if anybody wants an I Dream of Genie face mask as well, they're only what, $19.99 on the site, or am I wrong?
Those are no, they're not on the site. I'm only offering them actually on Facebook to my Facebook friends. So you have to add me if you want to be able to do that. So just look for me under Genie Bottles on there. And because I'm only going to make 50 more, and that's it on this one, because they take too much time, and I have to focus on the bottle.
Yeah.
Christmas for me started in June 1st. So
right.
I have to do Christmas orders in order for me to make it on time for the people who want one.
Wow. And is Christmas, it is heavy, right? It's busy time, I guess. You're doing a lot.
Well, I'm doing what I can. I'm pushing it as much as I can in order for me to be able to make my orders on time, because I give myself a deadline. But with this coronavirus, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
Well,
John, this would make a lovely gift for me, John.
I know. I'm looking at them now. They're beautiful. Hey, Mario, I got a question for you. Do you keep a stock of the bottles in, like you have extra ones, at hand all the time, or do you make one each individually for the people?
I try.
because they're beautiful.
While I was in quarantine, that's what kept me busy in order for me to be able just to try to create an inventory so I have them so I could send them right out right away. So that did give me a head start for Christmas. That's why I have the time to make the masks right now, because I was able to make some so instead of having to have people wait. Because sometimes I have to put a 12-week waiting period because Christmas orders. I'm only a one-man shop.
Yeah.
So the quarantine did help me as far as giving me time to make them. But it also depends on the design. I don't have any of the sofa bottles. I have to make those per order because those do take me 21 weeks to make one.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this: how many signed bottles do you have available, or do you have to get more signed? I mean, because obviously, like you said, Larry's not signing them, but
I still have some signed by Larry and Bill and Barbara. I have about. In inventory, I probably have about 200 that are signed by them. I'm not selling any of them as of yet. I will sell them at one day, but not now. There's a certain time and place for everything, and I'll put them out when it's time. When it comes to the unsigned ones, I can get Barbara to sign those, or when we do a show. If somebody wants to buy one and they want Barbara to sign it, it's convenient for me to be able to have Barbara sign it because she's right there at that time, and I'll do that. But outside of the show atmosphere, I don't really like doing it because that means I have to drive from Arizona to California in order for me to go get them signed, and it's really not worth it if it's two or three bottles, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's a long drive. And
well,
so, you know,
I do
what I can when we're at a show together.
Yeah. Now, when the quarantine is lifted and they do a chiller again, are you planning on doing any more chillers, or are you done with those too?
I would love to go back to it. Barbara's scared, and she should be. You know, I love doing all the shows, and I will go back to them. I do the shows with or without her, and it's always nice to have Barbara next to you. You know, when you do this, but it's but Barbara's health comes first when it comes to that, and so
absolutely.
Everybody's health comes first when it comes to that. I think that the shows, all of them, I mean, look at San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, that's killing them, but they're not going to be able to do it. All the shows, it's killing Kevin, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's that. I love Kevin like a brother. And the thing is that right now it's not the time for social gathering.
Right.
And, you know, and I mean, you're seeing all these people with the protesting and everything, and I really do believe that people are forgetting the fact that the coronavirus is marching alongside of these people.
Right.
And we need to be able to get on top of it because it's on top of us at this point.
Right. Well, we'll know in about 2 to 3 weeks how the protests panned out medically on the health side with the
virus. We're going to find out more than that. I mean, it's, these protests are not slowing down.
No.
So it's not really 2 to 3 weeks. It's going to be. This is going to last for a long time until it does slow down. Because what is it going to take for them to get sick and die in order for them to stop protesting?
Right.
I mean, you know.
I read something today that virus. They think it's going to last till 2022.
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there isn't a country. My mom is 82 years old. Right now, Arizona is a boiling pot, you know, and the numbers are spiking like you wouldn't believe over here. And I would love to be able to grab her and go to a place where it's simmering down versus spiking up. So, you know, it lessens the chance of her being able to get it.
Right.
But the thing is that I can't leave this country because no country is allowing any American in there. And I can't say that I blame them. You know, my friends in Italy are telling me, you know, Mario, I hate to say this, but it's true. She says America is acting like a zoo with all the gates open and all the animals are killing each other.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it is. It doesn't matter.
What we're seeing on TV is what we would watch on TV in some other country.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're seeing now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sickening.
You know? I mean, really, I never in my life ever thought that I wanted to buy a gun, but now I'm thinking about it, you know?
Yeah, well, let's see. Johnny's got several of them, right, John?
I certainly do.
Yeah, no. My mom's neighbor is the chief of police out here.
Oh, wow.
He told me, yeah, you want to get a 9mm Glock 19, la, 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 you know. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're saying. He says, well, I'll help
right.
you know. And it's like, you know, I don't even like the idea of holding one. I don't want to shoot myself, you know.
Yeah. Well, John used to own a gun shop, I believe. Right, John?
Yeah, I owned the gun shop, and the funny thing was we had a lot of friends who were, you know, oh, I'm afraid of guns. I'm scared. We took them out shooting, and they had so much fun doing the target shooting that they all bought one. You know, so it's just a matter of, you know, getting over the, once you fire a couple of shots and you hit the bullseye, or you get close to hitting the bullseye, you're hooked.
You think you're Rambo at that point, huh?
It's just like playing darts or, you know, playing any type of sporting game. You just get hooked onto it, and, you know, they always, you know, they don't stop at one gun. They get another one and another one, you know, but it's fun. And in this day and age with all these riots and people coming to your house and, you know, killing you for no reason, you have to protect yourself. And if they're going to defund the police, you know, you need something.
Well,
you don't want to be a victim.
You know, and that's true. That's why I really want to get out of this country. I really do. Just for, you know, temporarily get out of here. I want to go on. I want to go to Gilligan's Island. You know, I just want to go somewhere where I could just take a deep breath and not have to worry about me just inhaling poison.
I know, and
it's just like, I don't want my mom. My mom is 24/7 on the watching, you know, the news and everything.
Right.
It's scaring the hell out of her, and I'm like,
exactly.
You know, I know that they, I mean, they're doing it for ratings, you know. But I mean, but for me, I just want to be able to. I like to escape. That's been my life, my entire life. That's why I'm an artist, because
the best thing to do is to turn off the news, put on a comedy show, or put on some old I Dream of Jeannie shows when times were good.
I agree.
And just relax. We're getting news. We're hitting it, you know, as it happens, we're watching it. And that wasn't like that when we were growing up. You know, we had to wait for the news to come on it. You know, and now I think we're just a news overload, and you're right, it's all for ratings.
24 hours a day.
You know?
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's why, like the other day, I made a post on my Facebook page just, 2 days ago, when Miss Marianne from Romper Room had died, you know?
Yeah.
No, I remember her.
I always had a grudge against her because she never said my name, you know? And then but then I met her when I was like 40 years old at a Cheesecake Factory, and I walked right up. My friend said, you know who that is over there, right? I'm like, no, who? He says, that's Miss Marianne from Rumpel. I stood straight up. I went right to her table. I looked at her in her face. I said, look, damn it. You can say my name so I can die a happy man. You understand? So she did. She had her little thing. And she's like a whopper, bopper, bopper, boo, whatever, you know. You know?
Oh, God.
She said, I see only Mario. And all of a sudden, my grudge against her, like, you know, faded away. But for 40 years, you're a total bitch. I mean,
rest our soul.
Exactly. Rest your soul,
you bitch. No. my nephew was actually on the show towards the end of the show. He was, he was very small. But, yeah, he was actually on the show at the time. But where in Arizona are you, roughly? My sister's in Glendale.
Oh, I used to live in Glendale when I first moved here. I moved to Glendale. I am in a city called Queen Creek. And
I never heard of it.
I am Glendale's on the west side. I'm on the east. I'm about... half an hour, 40 minutes away from Phoenix.
Yeah. No, Arizona's gorgeous. I love it. We're going.
If you come out here, you need to go to Sedona.
Yeah, Sedona. I love Sedona. You kidding?
Yeah.
I've been there twice so far. I loved it. The first time I went was very odd because they say people go there to get away from allergies. When I was there, I got allergies.
I couldn't
breathe. My God, I was dying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me in Florida. I can't breathe in Florida because I can't take humidity.
It's horrible.
I mean, it's horrible. It's like breathing through cream soda. You just can't do it, you know. Here in Arizona, it's dry, and at least I can do it. But you know what? Anything after 115, it's friggin' hot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just get the same side. But I moved out here because I fell in love with Sedona. And then I realized you had to be a billionaire to live there. So I.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I.
Gorgeous.
But it is beautiful.
No, I can see your bottle selling there. They have all those kind of shops like that. I can definitely see the bottle selling.
Oh, I definitely sell in the galleries there. Yeah, there's no question about that. Sedona's been very good to me.
Oh, I don't recall seeing it when I was there. I went to a couple stores, but I don't recall seeing it. But I would have definitely picked it out, you know, because I was a big fan of the show. It's probably not a store I went into, though. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Sedona is gorgeous. My sister, when she first moved out there, said that if there was a heaven on earth, it's Sedona.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when I got there, I was like, yep, it sure is. It's absolutely gorgeous.
She's still here?
She actually, she lived there for a couple of years. She came back to be with her future fiancé. They stayed here for a little while, and then she went back, but she left all her furniture. So now she settled in, and we actually just shipped her out this morning. She packed up a truck, and I talked to her right before the show. She was in, Missouri, I think. And they left at 10 a.m., and I called her at, 6:45, and they're in Missouri.
Okay.
Or something, I don't remember where she said now that I think about it. But, yeah, no, they're on their way back home to Arizona. She loves it there.
Well, yep. If you come back out here to visit, we got to do dinner or something.
Oh, I would love to, Mario. Yeah. Please. We're probably going to go out in April next year. So,
yeah, that's the best time to come. So you're not
Well, that's when I went last time was in April, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but, I would definitely let you know when I'm heading out. You kid, it'd be a thrill to meet you, an honor. I would love
thank you.
Yes, I would love to take you to dinner.
I don't foresee Chiller happening in October either, sadly.
No, I
don't think. I don't think any. I think all the shows are dead this year.
Yeah.
You know, and so hopefully in April, Kevin will be able to, go back to normal on there for his next show.
Well,
and if he does,
if Chiller does come about, please let me know if you're going to be there because I'm definitely going to make it.
Oh, I'm going. If I'm going to talk to Kevin myself, and tell him, look, I want to go. Because he told me that I can go in October of this year, but I don't think it's going to happen. And, but I do want to bring Barbara because this year marks the 55th anniversary of I Dream a Genie.
Right.
And usually,
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah. The anniversary years, usually the crowd comes out during anniversary years. But since we can't celebrate the anniversary because of this, we're going to have to celebrate the 55 in the 56th year. And so, it actually will still be 55 because 55 begins in September. And so it'll be September to September. So if we could hit April's show, we could still celebrate the 55th anniversary of I Dream a Genie at Chiller.
Yeah.
I'm
going to look for you. You better tell me that you're going to be there because I'm going to find you. I'm going to hunt you down.
If we don't do Chiller, then I'm sure we'll probably do a Big Apple Con.
Oh, cool. Well, I can go over there, too. That's a hop, skip, and a jump for me, too. So not a problem. Well, Mario, thank you so much. Guys, if you are interested in getting your hands on an I Dream a Genie bottle that are made in the most beautiful detail by Mario AC. Oh, what's the AC, Mario, real quick?
You know, it really doesn't stand for much of anything. My mom's grandfather was the Duke of Italy, and so it was a mark of royalty, and so it was when they had monarchy in Italy, and so it was a stamp that they put in the name. So it's not a middle name; it's actually a stamp of the royal blood. But that's what the AC is for. It's a stamp versus a middle name.
Nice, 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 and you're related to the Duke of Italy. How funny is that?
He was my great grandfather.
Wow, isn't that amazing? Well, again, before we go, if anybody's interested in purchasing an I Dream a Genie bottle, if you can't get one in person and meet Mario, you could always go to geniebottles.com and get yourself a bottle. And I love them; I think they're absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
And Mario, it was an absolute pleasure speaking with you, sir. And
all mine.
And I do hope we stay in touch.
Me too. And so it was nice talking to both of you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mario.
You too, Mario. Stay inside.
All right, I will. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, honey.
Bye-bye
take
now.
Care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, what a nice guy. Well, I tell you, Johnny Boy, we
really
get the
nice.
Nicest people on the show, don't we?
We do.
You know?
We certainly
do. We get
do.
The nicest
yeah.
people. And I'm looking at when I typed our promo on the platform, boy, do I got some typos. Oh, crap, I got to fix
yeah.
that up.
I was wondering. I wonder who Maria is.
I got to fix it. No, I won't. I don't have very good lighting in here. I got to do something about the lighting. I'm not even put my
you.
Glasses on.
Yeah, we got to get you new lighting,
on.
New glasses, and maybe
yeah,
a new
yeah.
chair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you heard the chair? You hear the chair when I'm in it? Well, no, that if it sounds like farting, that's my dog snoring.
Oh.
Is that what you do? You mean
okay.
squeaking or farting? Squeaking.
We always,
squeaking or farting?
We always blame the dog. We always blame
no,
the dog.
No, no, no. It's a pug. He snores like crazy, and he's up my ass. I can't go anywhere. This dog goes, I can't do anything. You have no idea. I went out to the car today. I have a brand-new car covered in dog hair because I have to
yeah,
take him to the
you,
vet.
Yeah, but you were upset that you had to bought him. You were really upset that you had to put him away
oh,
for a
was,
week. So
yeah, I was devastated. He did good. He did good. So today I went out there to try and get all the hair out, and I'm literally just feet away, and this dog is crying like he would not, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't do anything, you know? Oh, poor thing. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Yes, but if you do hear that, that's the dog. It's not me. It's not me.
So who's
so,
on this coming
oh,
Wednesday?
Oh, wow, we have a nice treat. We've got Joe Alves. Is going to be on. He's the production designer of Jaws. Remember, we owed Joe a show.
That's
and
right.
that's going to be quite interesting. And then after Joe, we have a surprise guest. B.B. King's daughter, Shirley, is going to be on with us. She's got a new album coming out, and some amazing folks are on it. And I can't wait to have her on the show. And we're going to call her after we're done with Joe because we don't know how long to go with Joe, and I don't want to interrupt Joe's interview. So after what happened last time, you know what I mean? So
he gets a full hour.
Yeah. So I don't know if we'll go a full hour, but you never know. So as soon as we're done with Joe, we'll move on to Shirley. And so we got Joe Alves and Shirley King, BB's daughter. And then on Father's Day, we have a special the president of the Daytime Emmy Awards is going to be with us for an announcement in regard to the Daytime Emmys coming back to TV. And also on the 24th, we have Bruce Valanche that we were speaking about earlier today. He's a comedian, comedy writer. You might remember him most because he's always behind the scenes as being on Hollywood Squares or other game shows that back in the 70s and maybe 80s too. And Maggie Jones, she's been a wonderful help to the folks on the front lines with her products, and we're going to talk to her about that. We have director John Hancock on the 28th, and by popular demand, my boyfriend, Michael Cole from the Mod Squad.
Excellent.
He played the white guy. We
the
just
white
talked
guy.
Last night, actually. Yeah, we just talked last night. The gentleman that interviewed me, Char Richards, he was dying to speak to Michael. So I said, well, let me talk to Michael, see what he says. And Michael was more than happy to want to speak to Char as well. And so
right.
they're going to work something out. So, but, yeah, no,
excellent.
We got an amazing couple weeks coming up. July is filling up. I'll probably work on it this week, and we'll go from there. And so thank you all for listening.
Sounds
good. Thank you to our guest, Steve Bluestein, comedian, comedy writer, crazy life, but he turned it around. Thank God, huh? And
I hope he gets his
new
washer and dryer.
Me too. I hope I get my new dryer. And celebrity artist Mario A.C. Della Casa, the creator of the I Dream a Genie bottle. And, man, are those gorgeous bottles. So thank you all so much. Thank you to our sponsors, the High Barn Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video, Kitnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Keys for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Winoka Harbor. Oh, shoot, I forgot about Oleander PR. We've got Oleander Public Relations in Texas. And also, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's sake. Beautiful foundation. They help people out who have, their families have been going through cancer, and with donations, they're able to send families away free of charge, a beautiful vacation where the family can just forget about everything. And when I tell you they do, they do. So thank you to everybody. Thank you to our listeners, our callers. Johnny Goy, thank you. You, to you, you know I love you. And we'll see you guys on Wednesday the 17th.
And as they say, it's time to go, Clara Bow.
Thanks a lot. Well, you got to bust my balls. No, is it time to go? Oh, I'm ready
it's
to go.
It's time to go, Clara Bow.
I'm ready to go, Clara Bow. That's it. All right, yeah. Folks. Thank you so much. Have a good night, all. We'll see you on Wednesday. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, night. Take care.